from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. In this half hour, we welcome the new executive director of the Sierra Club. In March, Michael Bruhn will take over the venerable environmental organization founded by John Muir back in 1892. He'll replace Carl Pope, who's led that organization since the early 1990s. Bruhn previously led the Rainforest Action Network, a group known for its feisty tactics in confronting the environmental practices of various corporations, including the time Bruhn took over the intercom system at a Home Depot store, a story we'll hear about in just a moment. Michael Bruhn lives in Alameda. He's also the author of a new book called Coming Clean, Breaking America's Addiction to Oil and Coal. Michael Bruhn, good morning.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Happy to have you with us. Before we get into the meat of our topic during this half hour of our program, I just want to pick up on the conversation we just had on high-speed rail, because in some ways it represents the sort of classic environmental concern that you will now have to contend with leading the Sierra Club, which is this conflict between, as we heard, the concern about someone who doesn't necessarily want a 200-mile-an-hour train going by his front doorstep, and the other person who called in and said, yeah, it'll affect you, but we've got a much bigger issue here, which is that this will help us deal with climate change. How do you enter into that sort of inherent conflict?
With a lot of patience and some humility, and I think in an understanding that often, in many cases, both sides are right. You know, if you're a homeowner and you have this proposal of a 220-mile-an-hour train screaming by five times a day, that brings up a whole series of concerns. And you want to, we're speaking theoretically, you want to find a way to address those concerns, mitigate them if possible, and to be receptive to the concerns of individuals, even as you try to balance that with the what would benefit the state or an entire region to a great deal. So I think it's just trying to balance both sides is the challenge.
And has the Sierra Club taken an advocacy position with high-speed rail? Do you see this as being something important environmentally for the state?
Absolutely. We have a very large program focused on green transportation more generally. It combines our work to increase fuel economy. We want to both get people out of cars as much as possible and make sure that we can promote the most carbon-free transportation system that we can achieve through buses, high-speed rail, all different forms of high-speed transit, as well as when people do need to drive cars, making sure that those cars are as clean and efficient as can be.
Is it part of your goal in coming to the Sierra Club to push the organization in that direction? We think of the Sierra Club, at least classically, perhaps no longer accurately, I don't know, as being primarily concerned with wilderness preservation, the sort of John Muir tradition, sure. David Bauer and all the rest. Are you going to kind of nudge the Sierra Club further in the direction of being more focused on issues like climate change?
Well, I would say yes, but it's really more helping the Sierra Club in its continuing evolution. Over the last 10 years, the Sierra Club has done a great job of holding on to its roots of being the premier lands conservation organization in the country, and has actually reinvented the work of lands conservation in worlds dominated by climate change. So this program is called the Resilient Habitats Program. And what that means in real world terms is we can't simply draw lines around an area and consider it protected, because we're seeing species migrating to higher altitudes and to northern latitudes. And so we have to adjust how we actually conserve land. And at the same time, what the Sierra Club has been doing over the last several years is focusing on a whole series of programs, what we call the Climate Recovery Partnership, that addresses the construction of new coal-fired power plants or green transportation or federal and international climate legislation that will help to create the clean energy economy that we need. And so I'm excited to be a part of that, and definitely will be accelerating that in the years ahead.
Michael Bruhn, our guest this half hour. He's the new executive director of the Sierra Club. Before that, he led the Rainforest Action Network. And I wanted to ask you about the tradition from which you come, the activist work you did with the Rainforest Action Network. I mentioned the anecdote in the introduction about the time that you sort of took over the intercom at a Home Depot store. Tell us that story.
Sure. So it was my first campaigning job. I was hired by RAN, we call ourselves RAN, in 1998. And the goal was we wanted to change the way in which logging companies operated. We wanted to help them get out of old growth forest and stop converting 2,000-year-old trees into 2x4s or copy paper. And Home Depot at the time was the largest retailer of old growth wood products. We ran ads in the New York Times and the Atlanta Journal-Constitution where they were based. The Dave Matthews Band got involved. REM got involved. We had hundreds of protests out in front of stores. Kids were writing letters from all around the world saying, please, Home Depot, please do the right thing. So over the course of the campaign, we began to get calls from Home Depot employees who would say, inevitably, we like this company. It's a great company to work for, but we don't want to be associated with a company that's destroying rainforests. So they would give us advice or they'd give us information about where their wood was coming from, when a shipment of tropical hardwoods from Indonesia would be arriving, where it would be arriving. They'd give us inside information about how the company was receiving our protests. And then I got a call from one employee who began consulting on how to do better protests. And he said, you know, we were thinking, we had a group of us were thinking, what if you took your protests, instead of having them outside the store, bring them inside? And he gave me the intercom codes. So the codes to every Home Depot store. So you can walk down an aisle. If you go to Home Depot today, there's, you know, in every aisle, there's a couple intercoms, which traditionally will be used to say, you know, there's a spill in aisle 12 or whatever it might be. So we went in and literally got on the intercom and, you know, pressed pound 80 is what it was at the time. Might still work if you need it. And we would say, you know, attention Home Depot shoppers. We'd like to let you know that in aisle 14, we have wood that's been ripped from the heart of the Amazon basin. In aisle 15, there's Western red cedar that has been taken from the Great Bear rainforests. So we would do these, what we call intercom actions all across the country and across Canada to convince Home Depot that this was a huge problem and that they needed to take action. And they did. Home Depot agreed to phase out all sales of wood from endangered forests. They agreed to work with us to change logging industry practices. And it was a good example of how activism really can work.
And it's an example of what the Wall Street Journal refers to you as the most savvy environmental agitators in the business. And so I'm curious if you're going to bring that sort of spirit to the Sierra Club. I realize that there's other things that you did at the Rainforest Action Network that went beyond sort of commandeering the intercom system. But is it time, in your view, for the Sierra Club to have an injection of that sort of activism?
Well, absolutely. You know, I think that the Sierra Club has been doing some of the best work on the planet to promote the conservation of some of the world's last and best places, and has done fantastic work at the state, local, federal level at stopping the construction of new coal plants, advancing very specific and pragmatic solutions. And at the same time, it's not enough. And the challenges that we face as a society in this country and globally are so significant that we have to continue to innovate. We have to continue to find creative and fun and exciting ways to stop the worst of the worst, to stop investments in the tar sands, to stop the construction of new coal-fired power plants, to stop mountaintop removal, just to give a couple examples, and to promote very real and pragmatic solutions to all of these problems. So we'll be doing all of that at the Sierra Club.
So do you see yourself as being someone who one day might be commandeering the equivalent of the PA system at the Home Depot, engaging in some kind of active protest, and the next day meeting in some corporate boardroom and doing one in the morning and one in the afternoon, that it's got to be all of the above?
With a change of clothes, perhaps, yeah. You know, what we do at Rainforest Action Network is very similar on maybe different issues and certainly a somewhat of a smaller scale to what the Sierra Club is doing. What the Sierra Club is brilliant at is using a wide range of tools to affect change. You know, the Sierra Club has a fantastic, probably the best legal team in the country. They've got great lobbyists working in D.C. and in state houses across the country. And they have the largest grassroots environmental base of any organization in the country. So we'll be doing everything that we can. We'll reach deep into our toolbox. We'll expand the toolbox to try to find ways to inspire and or embarrass or occasionally provoke corporate or political leaders to do what they need to do.
Michael Brune, our guest this hour. He is the new executive director of the Sierra Club. If you'd like to phone in a question or an observation to Mr. Brune about what you'd like to see the Sierra Club take on, here's the number if you want to join our conversation. It's 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, or you can email us your thoughts at forum@kqed.org. That's forum@kqed.org. It sounds in some ways like you want to bring back a little bit of the spirit of David Brower, the legendary leader of the Sierra Club in the last part of the 20th century, who, as you know, resigned from the Sierra Club not long before he died. And when he did so, he said this: The world is burning, and all I hear from the Sierra Club is violence. The planet is being trashed, but the board has no real sense of urgency.
David Brower is obviously a hero. And when I think of walking in the footsteps of David Brower and John Muir and Mike McCloskey and more recently Carl Pope, it's a big job. Sierra Club is an institution with a fantastic history. If you look at what the Sierra Club has been doing particularly in the last few years, I think that you'll find that there might be a gap between the perception, the overall brand of what the Sierra Club represents, and their actual activities.
Branding matter?
Yeah. I think that the Sierra Club, if you look at the record of the Sierra Club, is very aggressive. It's very innovative. It's very solutions oriented. It's got fire in its belly as an institution. And it has such a great base. So I don't think that my hiring represents a systemic sea change. There's a lot of great work that I'll simply try to keep going. And we're going to need to continue to try to find new ways to be more successful than we have in the past.
Let's hear what some of our listeners would like to see you take on. David in San Francisco joins us first. David, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I was surprised to hear President Obama, who I support, mentioned clean coal technology in his State of the Union address, and I was under the impression that there's really no such thing as clean coal technology. Can you set me straight?
Seems like you have the right idea. Thanks for your call, David. Here's what I think about this. I think that Obama is a fantastic person. He's got great leadership abilities. He's done a very good job as president, I think, on environmental issues in his first year. You can find a long list on the Sierra Club's website and a number of other organizations' websites of the environmental initiatives that Obama has passed in the first year. And at the same time, when I was listening to the State of the Union, my heart sinks every time that you hear Obama talking about clean coal or the need for more nuclear power.
Let me just interject and read what he actually said, and then have you reflect on that further. Yeah. And again, thanks for the call, David. President Obama, in a State of the Union address, said, this means building a new generation of safe, clean nuclear power plants in this country. It means making tough decisions about opening new offshore areas for oil and gas development. It means continued investment in advanced biofuels and clean coal technology. So that's sort of a laundry list of things that environmentalists don't like very much. Nuclear power, offshore drilling, clean coal technology, which you refer to in your book as an oxymoron. There's no such thing as clean coal technology.
Yeah. So I'll say that there were some great paragraphs before that statement, great paragraphs after that statement. There is legitimate reason to be very excited about much of what the administration is doing. And at the same time, that paragraph was a little embarrassing to have a Democratic president advocating for things that run against the values of many of the people who put him in office. I think that the more we talk about clean coal specifically, or even offshore oil drilling and nuclear power, and the more investment we're putting into those technologies, the further we're getting away, the longer we'll be dependent on dirty sources of energy. So that's just not it's definitely not the change that we can believe in. And we think that there is a better way to cut carbon and to produce jobs by focusing on clean energy.
Do you put all of those in the same, on a continuum of environmental concerns, from clean coal technology to nuclear power? I mean, where do you place them? Because you can make the argument for nuclear power, as they have in France and elsewhere, that it actually is a pretty clean source. And if you take care of the safety issues, big if, I know, and you figure out the waste issue, big if, I know, that there's a legitimate argument that can be made for that.
You can make an argument. I don't think it'd be a very compelling one, personally. Looking at it this way, if focusing on nuclear power, investments in nuclear power, the construction of new nuclear power plants is one of the most expensive ways to create energy. It's one of the slowest ways to create new energy sources, and it's one of the most water-intensive ways to create new energy sources. That's not even getting into the mining of uranium. It's not getting into safety issues or the storing of waste. So there are much better alternatives than certainly the nuclear power or clean coal.
Michael Bruin, the new executive director of the Sierra Club, joining us this hour. If you have a question you'd like to put forward to Mr. Bruin, here again is the number. It's 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, and to Marnie in San Francisco. Marnie, go ahead.
Hi. I have a question about population. Right now in California, for instance, our state parks are terribly underfunded. We also seem to lack the capital to take on many of the green energy projects that we would like to pursue. And I really think there's a lack of voice about the draw that an increasing population will have on our ability to address advancing forward with green energy and also protecting our national our natural areas. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Marnie. This is one where I think you find a lot of environmental organizations in particular stumbling over. When this question comes up, you find that people in my position will talk more slowly and be really careful about this because
and the Sierra Club has had a history of really struggling with the issue of immigration and population growth in particular.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I haven't started at the Sierra Club yet. I haven't yet met with the folks who are doing work on these issues. My personal view on this is that you have to look at both sides of this, in the sense that I think that population is a very real concern. Globally, we're past the carrying capacity on this planet. Nationally and here in California, their population is a very significant concern. What you'll typically hear from many environmental groups, I also agree with, which is that this is not necessarily just a population issue, but it's also a question of how we consume as a society, particularly here in the United States and in other developed countries. So I think that, when we talk about immigration issues, the Sierra Club has traditionally been neutral. We believe that pollution doesn't stop at any particular border. Focusing on the larger issue of population, I do think that there are very valid concerns that need to be adjusted, both in terms of the population levels and the amount of the way in which we consume as a society.
Paul in Petaluma has our next question. Paul, go ahead.
Yes, I am a Sierra Club member, and I have been for life. I really think it's a wonderful organization, and I love their trips and so on. But I think it's become fairly obvious that climate change not being created by humans. In fact, there's a website, inconvenienttruth.com, but there's a lot of information about that. But my focus on the Sierra Club is I think we should really be looking at countries like Sumatra and Brazil, where they're burning forests, absorb carbon dioxide.
Paul, I'm sorry. Your call is really breaking up, so we're going to have to let you go. But I think he's raising the question of developing countries and assisting those countries where there is a lot of pollution. Don't know if he's referring to a place like Haiti, for example, which is largely deforested. But what role can the Sierra Club play in those sorts of situations?
Sure. Well, Paul, first, thanks for your membership. Thanks for your support. It sounded like you were talking about that, and you brought up, I think I heard you say Brazil and maybe Indonesia or Sumatra. 20% of greenhouse gas emissions around the world come from deforestation and land use changes. And particularly in countries like Indonesia and Brazil, the problem of deforestation is a primary driver of accelerating and runaway climate change. Indonesia is the third largest greenhouse gas emitter on the planet. Brazil is the fourth largest, and that's almost exclusively because of the amount of forest that they burn. The good news here is that by increasing our efforts to protect these forests, and not just in those two countries, but in places, what's remaining in Haiti and other countries, not only can we promote biodiversity and land conservation, but we can also work with indigenous communities who are the best stewards of these forests and fight climate change at the same time. So there's a great opportunity here. And with more financing, if we simply redirected our subsidies to the oil and gas industry into forest protection, we could solve two problems at the same time.
You've got a big laundry list of concerns to address. We've touched on a variety of them, from high-speed rail to deforestation to clean coal possibilities or the lack therein and all the rest. I mean, how do you sort through that as someone taking on this new position? Do you have a checklist? Do you have a priority order of things that are most important to try to address?
Well, sure. The Sierra Club, most of the program works there fall into six categories, and I hope you won't ask me to cite them all, but it's part of a broad program called the Climate Recovery Partnership that has a focus on One big part of that is stopping the construction of new coal-fired power plants, the Beyond Coal campaign that is seeking to replace, to retire and replace dirty coal plants and put in their place instead clean sources of energy, energy efficiency in solar and wind and geothermal and sources like that. We talked about green transportation earlier. We also focus on increasing the fuel economy of certain fleets. It's difficult to rank and rate all of those priorities because you're, as a campaigning organization, whether it's at Rainforest Action Network, Sierra Club, or whatever, you're always looking for you're looking to match the ecological imperative, what needs to be, what the planet needs, with what political opportunities exist, and you're trying to find a way to push a particular set of solutions when you think you have a really good chance of prevailing.
We have to pause for a pledge break in just a moment, but let me ask the same question in a slightly different way, just as getting one more word on this. If you could commandeer the PA system at the White House, what would you say to President Obama?
I'd recommend a couple quick and easy things, like ending mountaintop removal once and for all. I would commandeer the intercom system to give a pep talk to the political team, to encourage the White House staff to remember that it wasn't the coal industry that put the Obama administration in office. It wasn't the oil industry. It wasn't big agriculture. It was in large part young people who care very deeply about the planet that they're inheriting, who really believe that we can create a clean energy economy. And we'll get a president in place who will do that, whether it's this one or the next one.
Michael Bruin, the new executive director of the Sierra Club, has joined us this half hour. And this is Pledge Week for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Dave Iverson. Continuing our conversation now with Michael Bruin for our repeat broadcast this evening and also for those of you listening on the SiriusXM satellite network. Continuing this theme of commandeering intercoms for a moment, and we'll also continue to take your calls. So listeners, stay with us and we'll get a couple of more calls in as well. But I'm curious about how you would do that also with the advancing movement that we've seen recently on the Republican side. Scott Brown winning in Massachusetts is someone who said in the campaign that he had some doubts about man-made climate change. How do you extend your purview, I guess, to work with people on that side of the aisle?
Sure. Well, you know, Senator-elect Brown has also said he voted for the regional greenhouse gas initiative to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And we think that he'll listen to his constituencies in Massachusetts, who have long been very strong supporters of smart environmental legislation and come around eventually. What I would say is that Republicans, many of the Republicans in Congress seem to be focused on reducing deficits. They also seem to be focused on wanting to create jobs. And one of the best ways to reduce deficits and to create jobs is to promote clean energy legislation. We think that this is a big win, a big bipartisan win to pass comprehensive climate legislation that would reduce pollution, improve health, create jobs, and address one of the biggest problems facing this country. So we're optimistic.
That's also the old argument, of course, between environmental value on the one hand and the impact that that sometimes has on the economy. Michael, listening on the Sirius Satellite Network in North Carolina, has a question about cap and trade. Michael, go ahead.
Good afternoon. I enjoyed the show, and I just to see what the guests would what it were about cap and trade. And is he suspect at all about, like, who's making the money from the cap and trade? It strikes me as the same old thing with the mortgage and the derivative. And I'll take your comments off here. Looking forward to it. Thank you.
Michael, thanks. And if you would, as part of your answer, because sometimes I think these things are so easy to get confused about, paraphrase what cap and trade really would accomplish and then address the concern about whether or not it's just sort of smoke and mirrors.
Sure. So the cap part of in the cap and trade is supported by most folks, which is that we need to put a price on carbon. We need to limit the amount of carbon pollution, greenhouse gas emissions that are coming from the U.S. economy as a whole, and then reduce that over time in accordance to what science is advocating for, which in the United States would be an 80% reduction by 2050. The trade part is trying to find a way that would accelerate that and to ease the burden on the U.S. economy by allowing for traders or utilities or the financial services industry or a whole wide range of companies to profit from the exchange of greenhouse gas emissions reductions credits. A big concern that we had at Rainforest Action Network was that there was the allowance of offsets, whereby, for example, a coal utility, let's say in the Midwest, could avoid actually changing their operations and pay for someone else, pay for, say, a tree farm to be established in Costa Rica, or potentially fraudulent efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in another country, even here in the United States. We think that there are lots of better ways to stimulate a clean energy economy, and we'll be interested to see what emerges from Congress in the coming weeks and months.
Concern then about so-called greenwashing, that it'll allow people to be legal, but really won't affect a real reduction in greenhouse gases.
That's right.
To Chris in Sacramento. Chris, go ahead.
Hello. I've been also a member of Sierra Club for over 40 years, and just recently, a few months ago, I went in to buy a new water hose and picked it up, took it home, turned the label over and read it, and it said this warning on it in just regular letters that this hose contains lead. I was so outraged, and I took it back to Home Depot, and I asked
Home Depot. Sorry, go ahead.
And they said I could call OSHA, which I did. OSHA has nothing to do with that kind of thing. They told me to call somebody else. Anyway, I did all of the phone calling. The upshot of the whole thing is that they just, passed it off and made it my problem.
Chris, I'm so sorry to interject, but we're just about out of time. So let's see if we can get Michael Brunt for a response on how to handle those sorts of concerns.
Well, it's a shame that you have to handle those sort of concerns. If you buy a water hose, you shouldn't have to risk poisoning your garden or yourself, and just because you want to water your plants. It's a shame that Home Depot is selling those products, and they are certainly not yet a sustainable company, even though they did show good leadership on wood issues. And it's a shame that OSHA hasn't yet acted on this. What I would advocate for is join a local group, perhaps the Sierra Club, and take action and get involved.
And maybe end where we began, go back to Home Depot and take over the PA system.
That's right, pound 80.
Michael Brunt is the new executive director of the Sierra Club. Thanks for being with us this hour.
Thanks again for having me.
Forum is produced by Kevin Guillory, Tina Lorberg, and Judy Campbell. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our engineer this hour is Danny Bringer. And the executive producer of Forum is Raul Ramirez. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.